and welcome to the Book Podcast, talking with Australian women writers of fiction and non-fiction. I'm Rosemary Puddy.
This podcast is going to air on March 24th, 2020. And wherever you are, I hope you're staying safe and well. And please support your local authors and your local bookstores wherever you can at this time. Episode 156, The Girl in the Gold Bikini by Lisa Walker. Lisa Walker writes novels for adults and young adults. She's also written ABC Radio National Play and been published in The Age, Griffith Review and the Review of Australian Fiction. Her recent novels include a young adult coming-of-age story, Paris Syndrome, and a climate change comedy, Medge. She has worked in environmental communication and as a wildlife guide. Lisa lives, surfs and writes on the north coast of New South Wales. The Girl with the Gold Bikini is her sixth novel. Whenever I see a girl with a gold bikini, I think of Princess Leia. Here on the Gold Coast, gold bikinis are common, so I think of Princess Leia a lot. 18-year-old Olivia Grace has deferred her law degree and ducked out of her friend's gap year tour of Asia. Instead, she's fulfilling her childhood dream of becoming a private investigator, following in the footsteps of Nancy Drew and Veronica Mars, who taught her everything she knows, including a solid line in quick-quipping repartee, the importance of a handbag full of disguises, and a way of mixing business with inconvenient chemistry. Playing Watson to the Sherlock of her childhood friend, detective agency owner Roscoe, once the Han Solo to her Princess Leia, Olivia pursues a routine cheating husband case from the glitzy Gold Coast to insta-perfect Byron Bay, where she faces yoga wars, dirty whale activism, and a guru who's kind of a creep. Olivia Grace is a teenage screwball heroine for the Me Too era, and the Girl with the Gold Bikini is a body-positive detective romp rich with pop culture pleasures. Lisa Walker has written three novels, two YA novels, a radio play for ABC Radio National, as well as many short stories and articles. She is currently completing a PhD in creative writing, and I'm pleased to welcome her to the podcast today to talk about her writing life and her new YA novel, The Girl in the Gold Bikini. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Rosemary. Thanks for having me on.
The Girl in the Gold Bikini has the most wonderful protagonist in 18-year-old Olivia Grace. And as the book's blurb says, she's a teenage screwball heroine for the Me Too era. So tell me, what was the inspiration in creating a teenage private detective?
Yeah, look, I actually started writing this book a long time ago, about 15 years ago, in fact. And I was inspired by some of the crime writers that I was reading at the time, like Lee Redhead, not YA at all, of course, Lee Redhead, but I like the bounce and the humour in her novels. Also books like Kerry Greenwood's books and also the Janet Ivanovich, Stephanie Plum series. So I really enjoyed those sorts of humorous, feisty protagonists. And I thought it would be a lot of fun to create a heroine like that.
Well, the setting for the novel is the Gold Coast and Byron Bay, and it's an area that you live in and know quite well. But you spent your childhood in Fiji. Well, that just sounds wonderful, a childhood on a tropical island. What do you remember best about it?
Yeah, look, it was really lovely. It was quite a long time ago now, of course. But what I do remember is very strongly is going out on boats onto the reef and snorkeling on weekends, and also just the big trees. We lived in Suva, so there were all these big fig trees that we used to swing out of and have a lot of fun that way. And the food, you know, I went back to Fiji a few years ago and it all came rushing back, you know, the wonderful Indian food as well as the Fijian food, and all of that was, you know, strong memories of my childhood.
Was it difficult then? Because I think you did your teenage years in Brisbane, didn't you? Was it a bit of a culture shock coming back to Australia and not living that island life?
Yeah, it really was. We moved first to Sydney and that was even more of a culture shock. And after a year there, the whole family basically realised that wasn't going to work for us. So we moved to Brisbane. My mother was from Brisbane and, yeah, we settled in there and we liked it and we lived on the outskirts of Brisbane. It was quite a relaxed, tropical sort of life, so not too much different.
When you were a child, when you were in Fiji, what did you love to read? And were detectives like Nancy Drew a favourite?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do love Nancy Drew. I love how she's such a... I mean, she's a society girl and, you know, she was always dressed well and she drives a sports car. But apart from all that, she's actually really feisty and she always gets a man and, you know, she's quite incredible. And also I loved, you know, who didn't love Enid Blyton, all those mystery stories. And so they were certainly an inspiration.
As you said, your teenage years were spent in Brisbane before a brief stint on the Barrier Reef, before leaving the sunshine altogether and you headed down to the Snowy Mountains. What took you there?
Yeah. I wanted to become a cross-country ski instructor.
Oh, right.
And I had been down the snow, you know, a few times, but, you know, being from Brisbane, it wasn't sort of a big part of my life. But anyway, I had this idea that I wanted to do that. So I went down there and I lived in the Snowy Mountains and I did eventually become a cross-country ski instructor and lead tours out in Kosciuszko National Park, overnight tours, and built igloos and snow caves and... You know,
it was very adventurous.
Yeah.
Now, you did work in environmental communications. Was that while you were down there?
That was after that. I moved on and I actually worked in outdoor education at La Trobe University, teaching outdoor education. And then when I moved up to the North Coast here, I was working for New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife, doing community relations for them. So I'd do their signs and brochures and that kind of thing.
Well, like you say, you now live on the north coast of New South Wales and you worked in environmental communication. So that would have involved a fair bit of writing. But what prompted the move to fiction?
Yeah, I've always been a super keen reader, of course. I think most writers are. And probably my whole life I'd had it in the back of my head, gee, I'd love to be a writer. And then suddenly it was like, well, I think I'd better start trying to do this. And that was around 2003 or so, I started seriously trying to write fiction. And it took from 2003 till 2012 when my first novel, Lyrebird, was published.
Overnight success.
Yes, indeed.
Well, there are a few teenage private investigators out there in the literary world, but for those who've outgrown Nancy Drew but are not quite ready for someone like Tara Moss's detective Makeri Vanderwall, Olivia Grace is just perfect. So tell us who she is, what are our hopes and dreams, and where do we find her in life when the book opens?
Yeah, so Olivia's 18 years old. She's just left school. And unlike her friends, she hasn't gone off backpacking in Southeast Asia because she's seen her dream job advertised. She's always thought that she would love to be a PI. She grew up reading Nancy Drew and watching Veronica Mars, and she's always just thought that was the job for her. So she's managed to get herself a job at an agency on the Gold Coast called Gold Star Investigations. As it happens, the agency is run by an old childhood friend of Olivia's called Roscoe, and they grew up together playing Star Wars until Roscoe kind of ditched her and moved on to other things. But yeah, so that's the setup.
Yeah, and who's her family?
So at the moment, at the time of the story, she's living with her grandmother and her younger sister because her parents have gone off backpacking in Nepal for the school holidays, basically, and they've left Olivia in the care of her grandmother and her little sister.
The novel opens with these lines: "Whenever I see a girl with a gold bikini, I think of Princess Leia. Here on the Gold Coast, gold bikinis are common, so I think of Princess Leia a lot." Now, Olivia's got quite an obsession, and as you said, with Star Wars, and as you said, she used to play that with her childhood friend Roscoe, and he apparently was her Han Solo to her Princess Leia. How did she end up working for him? How come he started an investigation agency?
Yeah, so Roscoe has become something of an enigma to Olivia because when she knew him, of course, he was that boy who was playing Han Solo. And now here he is running this detective agency. But he, when she thinks about it, he always was a bit of an entrepreneur. You know, he moved on from being a kid to making apps for businesses and making a lot of money. And he's decided that the Gold Coast needs a PI agency, and he's the man to do it.
He's the man. Yes, he is. Well, Olivia has put on her first case, which is pursuing a routine cheating husband who runs a yoga empire and is the face of Muksushi, a sushi franchise. But all is not well in this yoga food world, is it? I mean, someone wants to put him out of business, and there are any number of suspects. So did you have fun creating the characters and the twists and turns of this story?
Yeah, I really did, actually. It's very fast-paced, and there's a lot of interconnecting plots that, you know, the whole time I was writing, I was thinking, I don't think this is ever going to work out properly, because there is a lot going on. And
there is.
Yeah, so I did have a lot of fun with it. You know, we've got the fast food joint that wants to open in Byron Bay to opposition, and we've got, you know, feuding yoga instructors, and we've got whale activists. And yeah, there's a lot going on.
Well, it is. It's a madcap race. As you say, it's got surf legends, hippie yoga teachers, sharks regurgitating severed arms, stand-up comedians, John Travolta impersonators, and feuds going back decades. It's also extremely funny. So did you have a clear plot when you started out, or did Olivia take you on an unexpected journey?
No, I had no clear plot at all. That was quite unfortunate, because it would have been good if I had, but... Yeah,
I don't know how you kept track of it all. Did you have a big whiteboard or something where you knew where everybody was at any one time?
No, I think I just kept writing and writing and writing and feeling quite anxious that it was all just going to be a big mess. And then when I got to the end, I did create a big whiteboard and sort of figure out how to make all the different strands come together a bit better than they were at the time.
Your books have various themes wrapped into the stories. They've got environmental issues, social commentary, discrimination, friendship and community. But it's the characters in your books that drive them. The wonderful Cassandra Daly and Lyra Bird, Edie and Sex, Lies and Bonsai. What a great title that is, by the way. Archie and Archie's Pilgrimage to the Next Big Thing. So when starting a new book, what comes first for you? Is there a specific theme that you want to explore, or is it a setting that takes you, or creating diverse female characters? What is it that you look for?
Yeah, I look for an interesting female character in general. So if I can get inside the character's head and I know that they've got enough going on to drive a story, and I think they're an interesting person that I'm going to enjoy spending time with, then that's enough for me to start a story. So that sort of leads to quite an anxious first draft process, because pretty much is all I know, that I've got this girl and she's just become a PI and she's going to get up to all sorts of mischief, and off I go.
When you finished writing this book, it's actually published by Wakefield Press. So what was your journey with Wakefield Press to get the book from manuscript to publication?
Yeah, the book, as I said, I started it way back in 2005. So I wrote pretty much a complete draft at the time. But although it actually got me an agent, it never got picked up by a publisher. So I just put it away for quite a few years, and went on and wrote my other books. And then after I made the switch to young adult and I wrote Paris Syndrome, I thought, yeah, you know, I've got that book back there. I think that's actually got some potential. And I went back and really spent almost a year on and off redrafting it. And after that, when I sent it to my agent, she loved it, and pretty quickly she sent it to Wakefield Press and they loved it. It all happened very quickly once after that sort of 10-year hiatus.
The books actually weren't published in the order that you wrote them then?
No, not at all. No, so this was actually one that I wrote way before any of the other books that I had published. And it wasn't actually the first novel I wrote either. I did write another young adult novel before this one that I'm pretty sure at this stage is never going to see the light of day.
I think every author's got one of those tucked in the bottom drawer somewhere,
yeah,
haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like working with editors for the first time?
I really loved it. And a lot of authors do say that, because you've been sitting with your work by yourself for a year, 2 years, however many years, and all of a sudden you're talking to someone who treats your characters very seriously, like they're real people with real motivations, and you know exactly what they do is very important, and it's very affirming. I love it. It's pretty much my favourite part of the whole process in a way.
Olivia Grace is a teenage screwball heroine, as we said, for the Me Too era, and the girl in the gold bikini is a body-positive detective romp rich with pop culture pleasures. But, Lisa, will we see Olivia again in her detective role?
I am working on a sequel.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through that. But, yeah, I can't guarantee any timeline with that. But I do feel that Olivia's got a lot more life in her.
I think she definitely has. Yes, I'd love to read about her again. She's so funny and just quirky and just everything about her was just lovely.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I really enjoyed writing Olivia and I knew she was someone I had to see out in the world eventually.
Now, you have written two YA books, but your other books are romantic comedies. Are you working on anything with those as well?
I am actually working on another adult book at the moment as well. That's part of what I'm doing for my PhD in creative writing. It's a bit different. It's got a male protagonist, but still in a similar kind of romantic comedy vein. So I really enjoy reading books that are lighthearted and funny, and I enjoy writing them.
Well, I loved Olivia. She's quirky, sassy, and she's very, very funny. The Girl with the Gold Bikini is a fast-paced, action-packed story, and it's going to appeal to all ages. And Lisa, I wish you every success with it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rosemary.
And that was Lisa Walker talking about her book, The Girl in the Gold Bikini. The Girl in the Gold Bikini is published by Wakefield Publishing. And the music today was David Setze's Night Surfing. Our book next week is Felicity Volk's Desire Lines, which is an epic, tender and heartrending story and begins with a line, "Are you still a liar?" The Arctic Circle, 2012. On a lightless day at the end of the polar winter, landscape architect Evie Waddell finds herself exhuming the past as she buries Australian seeds in a frozen mountain vault. Insurance against catastrophe. Molong, 1953. Catastrophe is all 7-year-old Paddy O'Connor has known. Shipped from institutional care in London to an Australian farm school, his world is a shadowy place where lies scaffold fragile truths and painful memories. To Paddy's South in Canberra, young Evie is safe in her family's embrace, yet soon learns that there are some paths from which you can't turn back. Impulses and threats that she only half understands but seems to have known forever. Blue Mountains, 1962. From their first meeting as teenagers at a country market, Paddy and Evie grow a compulsive, unconventional love that spans decades, taking them in directions neither could have foreseen. Set against the uneasy relationship society has with its own truth-telling in history, war and politics, Desire Lines is an epic story of love and the lies we tell ourselves to survive, and a reminder that even truths which seem lost forever can find their way home. And that's next week on the Book Podcast. I hope you can join me.
You've been listening to The Book Podcast. Details of this program can be found on our website, thebookpodcast.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It's free. And please, while you're there, leave a review. It'd really help. You can follow us via Facebook and Twitter at The Book Podcast. I'm Rosemary Puddy. I hope you've enjoyed the program. Thank you for listening.